Four associations representing federal contractors send a letter to the White House saying, in effect, they're fed up with executive orders and presidential memos that target their member companies. They say a dozen rules since 2009 have led to 16 expensive new regulations. Alan Chavotkin is the executive vice president of the Professional Services Council, one of the signatories. He joins me now to explain why contractors are so upset. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so is it really 12 in all these years?
It's at least 12. We continue to count, and how people count numbers can change a little bit, but it's at least 12, yes.
All right, so what are you basically asking of the White House in this letter?
We're asking for a pause to not issue any new executive orders, and hopefully fewer new procurement regulations derived from that. Companies are struggling to implement all of these regulations and policies that have come out in the last couple of years. It's raising the cost of compliance. It's raising the cost of the government for the implementation. And it's not a debate of whether these actions or right policy or wrong policy. It's just the volume of it and the need for some pause to give companies an opportunity to figure out how to implement them in a smart, coordinated, and consistent manner.
I mean, perhaps one of the most, I don't want to say egregious, but one of the most expensive ones, possibly, is minimum wage for contractors. That came out just in February of 14. Which is something that seems to be unfair only in the sense that every other contractor throughout industry with commercial customers doesn't have this requirement, only federal contractors.
That's exactly right. There are a number. Each one of these 12 orders focused exclusively on the federal contractor marketplace, requiring us to do something that isn't required of any other business in the country. And so that's where that challenge comes. The minimum wage executive order is a good example of an order that will have a direct and immediate effect on the cost of labor, the direct cost of labor. Now, in the professional services marketplace for many of our members, they're already paying salaries well in excess of that minimum wage. But for others, it is an increase, and that will have a direct impact on labor. And besides the price, the cost for the increase, there are a number of compliance and regulatory requirements that come out of that order and those implementing rules about paychecks and record keeping that also drive time and cost.
It's almost as if the administration, because it can't work its will on industry through Congress, although it's trying through the Labor Department and the Justice Department, but is using federal contractors almost like the crucible to test out all of the ideas it would like to have throughout the economy.
And many, you're absolutely right. Many of the guidance documents and issues, the orders that the president has issued, make that point explicitly. In fact, in one of the recent executive orders, the president said the government contractor community is ahead of the rest of the business world in its implementation and compliance. But we want this to be a leading indicator for where federal agencies and the rest of the business community should be.
You might be ahead of the rest of industry, but you're being sort of pushed with a bayonet across a rickety bridge, I guess, is the way, maybe a better picture.
That draws a great picture in my mind, too.
All right. So of the 12 that are listed by, I guess we should mention who the associations are. It's the NDIA, the AIA, Professional Services Council, and the IT Alliance for Public Sector. And what if there's one that you could take off the heap, which one would it be?
Well, it's one that doesn't yet have the full regulatory implementation, and that's the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces executive order. We've already seen the extensive rulemaking that's coming from both the Department of Labor and the Federal Acquisition Regulatory Council on what that implementation is going to look like. Comments are due the end of this month, and we intend to comment. Extensive comments about the impact of that. It'll have enormous implications, not only at the federal level, but for subcontractors. And this rule covers not only federal laws, but an unstated number of additional state and local laws. The Department of Labor guidance identifies one, OSHA requirements at the local level, at the state level, that companies would have to comply with.
And so what are some of the requirements? What are they looking for in the fair pay and safe workplaces?
They're looking for a reporting requirements, disclosure requirements, flow down requirements to subcontractors, certifications as part of each procurement that a company bids for, making sure that databases maintained by the government are current and accurate. And again, on many of these, it's not an objection to, nobody wants to not comply with or suggest that contractors should not comply with the labor laws, 14 of them that are called out in that order. It is the administrative burden, and in many respects, the regulatory scheme is almost impossible for companies to comply with.
We're speaking with Alan Chivotkin. He's Executive Vice President and Chief Counsel at the Professional Services Council. And the other one I think we have spoken about before is the strengthening protections against trafficking in persons in federal contracts. That's another one that has long tentacles and a lot of big compliance regimen.
Huge compliance. Again, we all abhor the trafficking in persons. We know it exists both here in the United States as well as outside the United States. This set of rules requires companies to drive all the way through their entire supply chain, all the way down to the lowest levels, wherever they may be in support of the activities. It sets a set of requirements on companies in the performance of their contracts about minimum housing, protections for workers. Again, most of our companies are in the business of providing that kind of that support for their workforce. And so the requirements in and of themselves may not be new, but putting those minimums into contracts, into requirements now drives up specific actions and therefore specific cost and compliance requirements.
And in talking with the member companies of the Professional Services Council, do they give you some scope, some idea, some metric of what all of this has started to cost them so far?
We're beginning to collect that. It's very difficult to collect the cost on a one each basis because the incremental cost of complying with the next one may not be as significant. It's a little bit easier in the minimum wage, for example, where you can actually measure the dollar value increase of those wages. But we see information that today compliance costs are about a quarter of the total cost of performing on government contracts, and some are suggesting that that could go up to as much as 30% or higher. So a significant increase in the cost of compliance cost, not the direct performance of the work.
Because compliance has really become an industry in itself. In fact, my daughter is a recent graduate, just got her first job in the big world of big business, and was surprised to see that there's entire departments in large companies now devoted to compliance, the idea of compliance. In fact, there's not only a vice president and general counsel for a lot of companies, but you have a similar type of person, often a lawyer, who is the compliance officer. That seems to be a recent development, maybe since Sarbanes-Oxley.
Well, it's certainly the compliance has always been, again, we're not suggesting that companies don't comply with the law or the procurement regulations, but the attention to this is so significant, and the implications, the consequences of failure to comply with procedural perfection are so high that for many companies, this is the new leader of attention in their business.
Plus, there's also the hammer that the government can wield if it finds some technical or, in some cases, willful, but usually it's an inadvertent lack of compliance. The cost there can even be greater.
Well, and that's another one of those consequences. It's not only the administrative, but there are significant civil, maybe criminal, and the meanest of all, which could be the suspension and debarment from future work.
All right. So, what it sounds like the letter is saying, or what I'm reading between the lines here, is much as you repeatedly say that companies want to comply in general, they don't want to be involved in human trafficking and so forth, want to pay fair wages. It sounds like maybe there's the hope for a chance of rolling back some of this maybe after the advent of 2017.
Well, we're not going to, our goal isn't to just get to the next president or the next administration, and what the outcome of that will be whatever it is. Our focus here is on an ability of the companies to meaningfully comply with these regulations, to put in place structures, regimes, the reporting requirements that are necessary, and the continuing layering of new requirements. It has both a substantive as well as an administrative burden on the companies. That's what we ask to hold off on. Let's engage in a meaningful conversation to see if there is another way to accomplish the same goals that the administration has through a less intrusive administrative burden.
Now, this letter just went out. Is there any reaction? You sent it to Dennis McDonough, the assistant to the chief of staff of the White House, and Valerie Jarrett, who seems to be the person that talks about whatever they need talked about. Any reaction yet?
None.
Okay, are you expecting anything or just thinking this might be, you know, like pushing Peter Pan over the side, no splash?
No. Well, we hope there will be reaction. We've not only written to the two senior people in the White House who can make this happen, but also have informally shared this with other senior officials in the government. We hope it engenders a response and a dialogue about how to accomplish some of the administration's goals. And we think there are ways to do that. That's why we wrote to the two people at the top of the food chain who we think are in a position to make it happen.
All right. Alan Chavotkin is the Executive Vice President and Chief Counsel of the Professional Services Council. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks for the opportunity.